Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to five or six podcasts regularly, and one of them is the handgun world. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in two of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had. That being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
Hello shooters, I'm Bob Main, and welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this is episode number 459, a practical show done by a practical guy. That is me, because I am not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, not even a former gunsmith or anything, and just do a little bit of firearms training on the side. I'm just a businessman, a family man, but I take my Second Amendment rights very seriously. So this episode, I was talking gear and practice with Ben Branham. We recently went to the range together. Ben Branham, the host of the Modern Self-Protection podcast, good friend of mine. We recently went to the shooting range, did some practicing, did some analyzing gear, which you're going to be hearing about, and you'll be hearing about some of the practice that we did as well. This show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions, makers of fantastic holsters, of which I own six or seven or eight of them. Most of the time, I use a Cobra outside the waistband, very concealable Al-Kydex holster by Concealment Solutions. You can find them at concealmentsolutions.com, and the coupon code HANDGUNWORLD, all one word, HANDGUNWORLD, will get you 10% discount when you check out and make your purchases. So here we go, no wasting time. My interview with Ben Branham about gear and practice. Okay, I'm with Ben Branham. Welcome back to the Handgun World Podcast.
Woohoo! Glad to be back.
We just finished shooting. We were at the range practicing for Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. We're teaching June 23rd, 24th, San Antonio.
Always got to practice, right?
Of course. We don't want to look silly on the range trying to teach the class.
You know, I was talking to another student the other day, and I was like, that is the most nerve-wracking thing for us. I mean, the nerve-wracking order of things goes from, you know, real gunfight, and then going to the range to actually shoot a competition. When that beep goes off, I was even more nerve-wracked. And then now going to classes and performing techniques in front of students.
Yeah.
To me, that's even more nerve-wracking than an actual gunfight. So I got to practice more for teaching students than I would for a gunfight.
And you've been in a few gunfights.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I get all nervous when I get up in front of the students to teach.
And this is exactly why I encourage people like to go to competition, because it puts you under that stress and makes you nervous. And you should get nervous and learn how to shoot when you get nervous and learn how to manage your nervous energy.
Yeah, you just get nervous, so you get used to it. That's kind of how it is. Yeah. It's a different kind of pressure, I know. Don't shoot me nasty emails saying I don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, it's a different kind of nervousness, but it makes you perform under pressure.
Well, and, you know, you just brought up something interesting, Ben. You know, instructors shooting in front of students. We do that. We will shoot in front of you. We will demonstrate what we're teaching. I'm not going to guarantee you and I will be perfect, but we're going to do it. And, you know, there are a lot of instructors that just won't shoot in front of their students. I could never understand that.
Yeah, I've been to a couple courses where the instructor hasn't fired a live round at all. They'll demo some of the techniques dry, but not fire a live round, and that kind of seems weird. I mean, it worked on a couple of courses I went to, but yeah, weird. Your instructor should be able to perform that task on demand.
With a reasonable amount of skill.
Yeah, I was going to say, at just about as one of the best people in the class.
Yeah.
Would be my reasonable amount of skill, because it's his skill.
And I always love it when students outshoot us in the class, because we've had that happen a few times.
Yeah, yeah. We've done a couple competitions at the end of the day, and they beat me, and it really irks me, and I got to...
No, it means that you taught them well. It means you taught them well.
It's my... I want to say that it's because I'm such an awesome instructor that they are shooting better than me, but really, it's kind of like somehow I missed... And I should have been practicing more is generally what happens.
Yeah, but that's okay. All right, so today we were practicing our moving and shooting, which we're going to teach students in the class, or any other classes that we do in the future. We're big on that. We were practicing lateral movement. We were practicing forward and backward movement, just trying to sharpen our skills. And we were making good hits today on the move.
Yeah, it's a really easy technique that I don't think people understand. They... You know, you see these videos, these guys running up and down the range, left and right, with one hand on the gun and shooting, and you're like, oh my gosh. And other instructors will tell you that's a total advanced technique way out there in the future.
No, it's
but
not.
For us, I figured out it's a parlor trick. Once you break it down Barney style like we do, one little step at a time, and then you work it for a little while, it's a parlor trick. And it's one of those weird things in life where you'll be running up and down the range, shooting, you can't hit the broadside of a barn, and you're like, what's going on? I don't understand. And I'm like, just try it again. Go this way, do this, look a couple extra, you know, reminders of what to do, and all of a sudden it'll just click, and you'll run down the range going, cling, 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 like as fast as you can pull the trigger and making hits on the target, and as fast as you can move your feet. And it just kind of clicks like that. And then once you get it, there's only... You just keep up that little skill level and just practice it every once in a while. And we give you tips on how to practice it at home. And you're off to the races.
And in case people don't know, we'll be shooting steel. We'll have you shooting steel. So you'll get that instant feedback, that audio feedback that you made a hit, which is also... I think it's very important for students to get that feedback. Sometimes when you're shooting paper, you can't always... You don't even know that you hit, and sometimes you can't even see it.
Yeah, and I think it's Bill Rogers that talks about that at Rogers Shooting School, and he uses steel, and he says you got to have that immediate feedback from shooting because you're having something negative happening in front of your face. I mean, the gun's moving, it's loud, it bucks, it's a big flash, and all these weird things happening that, you know, humans are not designed to have happen in front of their face. You know, that's the thing that makes you flinch. That's what you're designed to do. So you got to have that immediate response feedback. No, I did something good. So the hitting the steel, I really like shooting steel because it gives you that immediate feedback, and you either get that yay moment or you go, got to work on that, and you don't have to shoot the drill and then walk up and look at it and then try to decide if you did good or not.
Yeah, so we hope to have you in class. It's not too late. When this podcast releases, it'll be June 15th. Our class is the 23rd and 24th. If you're a last-minute person but you want to get in on that, just go to modernselfprotection.com/courses or go to my website, handgunworld.com, and I always put a link in the show notes. And we haven't nailed down a date. We're going to go do that at lunch right now, but we'll probably be teaching some others later on this year.
Yeah, we're going to start getting back at it, and Bob wants to go back on the road. Yay, me. I like being on the road teaching and seeing as many people as I can and taking the excuse to take an extra day off of work and go see some cool stuff across the country. Did that a couple years ago, and yeah, you guys in Alaska, that was an awesome trip.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to those guys.
I didn't go on that one, unfortunately.
But I'd love to see other parts of the country, too. So I'm going to put it out here. Bob doesn't know I'm going to say this, but we're always looking for a host and a host ranges. So if you want us to come out to see you, you need to find a range for us that we can use and shoot and move and draw from the holster and stuff and kind of have our own little private area. And then you can help us host a class and we can come out to your area. We'd really appreciate it. We need the groundwork. You got to make these relationships with ranges on the ground and get people to trust you a little bit so you can teach a class. It's always the hardest part.
And you can let the ranges know we're fully insured instructors, experienced instructors. We'd be happy to, you know, provide information to any range that wants to know about us. The other thing is, if you're going to host our class, we need you to help us promote it. You know, we will take care of you as the host. Just get with us privately. Send us an email. Send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com or ben@modernselfprotection.com, and we'll go over the requirements. But, you know, we would love to... Obviously, we have to have a minimum number of people to make it work. Every situation is different, so get with us on that. But we'd love to come out to your area and teach two-day Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. Or even if it's only a one-day, if we just do Beyond Concealed Carry, that was actually our very first signature class.
Yeah, we traveled a bunch on that one, too. So, yeah, 2 days is easier for us just because we can do more on the price, and we only have one fee for travel, really. And that's kind of, I know that sounds bad, but we got to be able to make enough money to pay for the airfare, the hotel, the rental car, ammo, and the range, at least. If we're not making that much money, you know, it's not really worth our time. I'd love to come see you, but it would be cheaper just to drive up and have a couple beers somewhere than rent the range and everything.
I want everybody to know that you and I, we are capitalists. So we do intend to make some money to put in our own pockets, but we do offer a very good service for that.
And normally what we do is just buy more gun gear to test so we can do more podcasts. Of course. So we can do more classes so we can do more. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not a money-making endeavor. This
no,
is
it's
a,
not.
This is a black hole of money, but we have fun doing it.
I've been saying for years, my podcast, our training classes, the Shooters Club, my Amazon store, and all that other stuff, it pays for my habit. It pays for my gun and ammo habit.
Yes, my ammo habit. It gets me. The guns, I look at new guns, I'm like, well, I really need that. But, you know, I'd rather have another couple cases of ammo to go shoot.
Exactly.
Yeah, so range time and ammo is expensive, and that's my, you know, I got to have it.
Yes.
Got to have my fix. Got to have my ammo fix.
Yes. And I want to go back to the range and rent the P365 and the Glock 19X that everybody seems to be talking about. Those two guns, nobody can seem to stop talking about those two guns right now, Glock 19X and P365. So, hey, listeners, I need to get some more money so I can go there and range test those and really put like a lot of rounds through those, do a video, either have Ben or my son do a video and report to you guys. I've done some of it, but I want to go back there and rent those two.
Those other habits right there.
Yeah, because I guess those are the two must-have guns now, right? The P365 and the Glock 19X.
You know, I shot a couple of the 365s, and I think I really like that one. I think I might have to. I might need a SIG 365.
Yeah. Need or want? Come on.
Well, I always say need.
You always say need. Yeah, right.
Like a hole in the head, but I need one.
You know, my mind might get changed on that pistol. I've put out a couple of videos and a podcast that I was going to wait because I want to make sure that all the bugs are worked out. I'm that way now. I got stung. And I tell you what, I got stung by buying two Glocks, the Glock 42 and the Glock 43, when they both came out. Yes, I'm saying that. You're hearing me say I got stung buying a couple of Glocks. Well, and the Smith & Wesson Shield. When they first hit the market, I had a problem with my G42. I had a couple problems. I had to send it back to Glock. And when I first bought the G43, when you were working at the shop, Ben, I had a problem with the magazine release button, and Glock had to send me a new one. So I'm not saying that any gun is perfect, but SIG had some issues with the 365 when it first came out.
Yeah, and now they've fixed them, and so hopefully you're good.
Hopefully I'm good, yeah.
I've seen a couple of them running pretty well. I ran a couple of them pretty well. So, I don't... And it's smaller than my pocket revolver.
Yeah.
And that's the one it might replace. I carry that Ruger LCP in my pocket, like 24/7. I think it might replace that because it goes to a full 9mm instead of the 38 Special. And it's actually smaller than my Ruger,
which
LCR.
Is amazing. Yeah, I may put that in my budget. I run on a real tight budget now. I'm back on the Dave Ramsey plan, but I think I might put a P365 in my budget for September or October, maybe.
Yeah.
So, and I think I might be confident enough in it that it's been out there long enough and proven long enough, at least by the later this year.
And it doubles my ammo capacity out of my revolver.
Ten doubles your revolver. Yes.
So, 10 rounds. That's a lot.
It's not too much more than my Shield, but it is significantly smaller than my Shield.
So I'll make a prediction here.
Okay.
Bob's not going to like the 365.
I've shot it already. It's not too bad.
It shoots more like a 1911 with a high bore axis, just like a 320. And for me, I just switch right back to... My brain just clicks right back to shooting a 1911 and letting a lot of muzzle flip in there. And I don't have any problem with the 365 or the 320.
I didn't notice it to be that bad with muzzle rise. When I shot the 50 rounds, it was about a month ago. I went over to Mission Ridge Range in San Antonio and I rented theirs. It wasn't bad. I liked the P365 better than the 320.
Okay.
I just the 320 just doesn't do anything for me. A lot of people love it, just doesn't do anything for me. I love my M&P 2.0 far better than a 320, but the 365 I thought was okay.
I keep thinking I might give up my Smith & Wesson for a SIG.
Heresy!
A 320.
You say, oh my God. Well, giving up your M&P, your beloved M&P?
I went over to the Shiloh Indoor Range in Houston and met their owner there, Jeff. He runs the Texas... crap. Now I forgot his podcast. Dang it, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Guns Over Texas.
Guns Over Texas.
Guns Over Texas, yeah.
And when I was in there, I just, you know, hey, I want to meet you. podcast listener, and he let me borrow his 320 RX with the window on it, you know,
shooting. Nice.
And I shot a dot drill and a couple other drills side by side with my carry gun, and I outshot myself with a 320 over my carry gun, my Smith & Wesson. So that's the only reason I'm thinking maybe I need a 320 RX.
Yeah, maybe you need. Yeah. You need it.
But
right?
Then here comes the problem on all that stuff. So the RX is about $1,000, give or take, with, you know, because it's got the window on it. But then it comes with everything else. I need to buy like 6 or 7 magazines. You know, I need 2 or 3 different holsters, mag pouches, all the support gear that comes with that. So, you know, when you switch guns, it's not just switch platforms. It's not just, you know, I buy the gun for the gun price. Now I need like $1,000 worth of support gear that goes with that too.
Yeah, so that's what people don't realize, because, you know, you should have at least 6 mags for any gun that you intend to carry. You know, you need to have some training mags and some carry magazines. So there's an expense, and the SIG mags are not cheap. And then the holster.
40 times 6.
Yeah, you know, that's 240. Yeah, and then you got to buy a good holster for it. And then you got to buy sights for it, I guess the 320s come with good sights, but it's things to consider when you're switching guns. And when we were on the range today, Ben, you told a story about when you were teaching a class and you ended up grabbing the wrong magazine. Talk about that.
Oh, those guys Alaska. I taught the class in Alaska. I stole one of the guy's magazines. Totally didn't mean to it. But the Ruger mag and the Smith mag, they look almost exactly the same unless you read the base plate. They're both steel, 17 rounds. They have the witness holes on both sides. And then they have lightning stripes that go up the side of the magazine on both sides. They look almost exactly the same. Well, they're not. So somehow, I knew he was missing a mag when we walked off the range. I checked all mine. I'm like, oh, I got all my Smith & Wesson mags. And then I come back to Texas, and they roll around in my bag. And then I go to teach another class. And normally when I teach a class, especially when I'm by myself, I'll put like 5 magazines filled on my belt just so I don't have to stop and reload. I can keep talking. And so, yeah, I go out to demo something and do a mag change, shove that Ruger mag in my Smith. It won't go in. I'm smacking it and smacking it and smacking it. It falls on the ground. I kick it and grab another one and get going again. So then I go back and pick up that mag. I'm like, what the heck is wrong with that mag? And I'm standing over there on the side of the range trying to shove this Ruger mag in my Smith & Wesson, and it just won't go in.
I wonder why.
So I finally thought maybe I had stepped on the mag and bent it or one of those deals. And so I picked it up to look at it and inspected it, put it real close next to the other one. I'm like, hey, this one's bigger. And then I looked at the base plates, and, you know, clearly it says Smith & Wesson on one and Ruger on the other.
And there was your problem.
I had to call that poor guy. I sent him his magazine. I don't know. It was expensive to send it to back to Alaska, but I was like, oh, I got your mag. I'm sorry. Let me send it back to you. Give me your address.
But, you know, I wanted you to tell that story because there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast that they have several different guns and several different platforms, different types of guns, and they carry different types of guns, which I'm not a big fan of, but some of you do that, so you need to pay attention. When you put your gun in your holster, if you're going to carry a spare mag, make sure you got the right one. See, this is the part of managing gear I don't like to have to do. I don't, you know me, I don't want to think much. I just want to grab and go. And so that's why I'm sticking to Glocks and M&Ps. And even that, those mags look, we may have a little break here because I had a call come in, and so I'll kind of edit that little space there. But we had, you know, Glock and Smith and Wesson magazines look significantly different.
Plastic
hard,
and metal.
It's hard to make a mistake on those, yes. But
still, get yourself something where you can't fail. I'll go on that. Set yourself up a system where you can't fail. So for me, like on the range, I've seen this a dozen times. I go to IPSC matches. I can't say USPSA matches, but an IPSC match and IDPA matches. And I go out there and I watch the guy unload and show clear, and he puts a half-empty mag back in his holster, in the mag holster, and he puts the round in his pocket, or he'll put the round back on the top of that mag, and he'll put the mag away. And then I'll see him go up on the next one, and he's, you know, 5 rounds short of a mag or whatever. He's only shooting half a mag because he shot the other half last time. So you need systems that won't fail you. I will not put a half-filled mag into my mag pouch.
No.
Empty mags and half-filled mags go in my pocket. Only filled mags go into the mag pouches. So that's a really easy way that I can't fail myself. On the multiple guns things, I have a friend that he puts his different carrying systems in little Rubbermaid tubs. and they go into a safe in the Rubbermaid tub.
That's a good idea.
So in the Rubbermaid tub is the holster that he uses, the gun, the spare mags, mag pouch, you know, all that stuff. It's one system in one box. So that way, if he wants to switch guns, he takes that box out, his empty box, he puts all his carry gear into that box, and then he'll pick up the other gun and put it on with all the carry gear. And that way he doesn't get mixed up to what magazine goes to which gun, what holster goes to which gun, what mag pouch goes to where.
Yeah.
You know, they're all different, and they all don't work together as well as they, you know, you want them to.
Right. That's a good idea, using the Rubbermaid tubs and things. You know, in my safe at home, basically all I carry now are Glocks and M&Ps. And so, and lately, mostly the M&P. So in my safe, I got the Glocks over on one side, the M&Ps on the other. But still, you got to be careful. It's so easy, especially if you're not paying attention, to grab the wrong one.
Yeah, well, especially you guys that carry Glocks, too. How about you carry your Glock 17 and your Glock 19, and you put your Glock 17 on today and your Glock 19 extra magazine?
No.
If you think about that, the Glock 17 is the full-size gun, the 19 is the compact. Well, the compact magazine won't fit in the full-size gun.
Yep.
But the full-size magazine will fit in the compact gun.
There you go.
So you got to be careful of stuff like that, too. And that's for you with your M&P. You got a full-size and a compact M&P.
Right.
The compact mags won't fit in the full-size gun.
Nope.
You know, that would really suck to find that out the hard way when you're malfunction or something in a gunfight and you go to your spare mag and your spare mag won't lock in because it's too short.
Yeah. So just be careful of that. Manage your gear. I think it's just called managing your gear and paying attention and... I know some people like to diversify. I tend to favor standardizing rather than diversifying.
So yeah, how can you make your system so you can't fail?
Right, because failure is not a good option. So while we were out there, we also did some practicing on shooting at about 35 yards. That was fun.
Yeah, easy.
You know, practicing that distance shooting. And we did something really cool for you Shooters Club members, or for those of you who are going to sign up soon. Ben did a speed test. You borrowed my M&P 2.0 compact with an Apex flat duty trigger, and you did a speed test and you compared it to your standard M&P with a standard factory trigger, and you found something interesting, didn't you?
Yeah, are we supposed to give it away or not?
No, we're not supposed to give it away.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to say, you found out an interesting result.
Yes. So I found that I like the Apex trigger, and but to see how it actually works and the comparison, you're going to have to go to the Shooters Club and check that out.
Then those will be uploaded probably by the time that this podcast comes out, but you used a shot timer, you did a side-by-side test, you shot several rounds at rapid speed with the M&P with my Apex trigger, and then you shot very, very quickly with your standard M&P, and I think the results are very interesting. So join the Shooters Club, $8 a month or $75 a year if you're not, and I will put, if you're not a member, I'll put a link in the show notes for that. So you like that Apex?
Yeah, you know,
Apex trigger.
I'm going to have to find, you know, maybe I need one of those too.
Yeah, the problem is they're not cheap. They're not cheap.
Is there anything in the firearms world that's cheap?
No. Not that's worth anything.
Not that's worth
using and carrying and buying, right.
Generally, yeah. That's not... Yeah, there's a lot of cheap stuff out there, but it's generally not worth buying.
In fact, you bring up an interesting point. You know, when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s, I golfed a lot. And I'm trying to figure out what's more expensive, shooting or golf. And they're both expensive. They're both real expensive.
Shooting is louder.
Well, yeah, of course, shooting, yeah.
So that makes
I enjoy shooting more now, but for those of you who either golf or have golf, that's not cheap either.
That makes it more fun because it's louder.
The great thing about both of the sports, shooting and golf, you can both do them when you're old like me.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, age is not much of a barrier on either of those.
Well, actually, I think the oldest gold medalist is a shooter in the Olympics.
Is that right?
I think he was 72 when he won his last gold medal. I can't quote me on the age, but I think he was 72.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can do the shooting thing for a long time.
All right. So, the other thing that we were discussing when we were out there at the range is we were talking a little bit about the different types of triggers, and mainly the reset on the Apex trigger, and then we were also talking about, you know, stock Glock triggers and things. So, Ben, I wanted you to weigh in. How important do you think is the reset?
If you want to play the video games with your gun, the run and gun games,
yeah.
Super important.
Yeah.
In real life, yeah. You just need to have something you can manage.
And there's a lot of argument about that. You know, some people shoot to reset, and they use that religiously, and they think that you've really got to have, you know, a nice, short, crisp reset. But you think differently?
Guys that shoot to reset are playing the games.
Yeah.
And I don't mind if you shoot to reset if you carry one gun and one gun only and you're the one gun man. You know, beware of the one gun man. He may know how to use it.
Yeah. True.
Guys that are switching back and forth, and I know you guys do it because I do it too. I'll carry my M&P. Like right now, I'm carrying my M&P and my Ruger. Definitely a different reset from a striker-fired gun to a revolver, double-action revolver. So, yeah, got to manage both of those triggers. If I'm trying to manage it off a reset all the time, I get programmed to manage the reset. And where I proved this to myself is I used to really be good with a 1911. That's where I grew up kind of shooting. And you guys are going to hate me, but you Glock fanboys?
Yeah.
Sorry. 1911 has a considerably shorter reset than a Glock.
Of course.
And whether you like it or not, that's the truth.
Of course.
So when I was training on a 1911 all the time, and then I'd go out to a police range or something, they'd hand me a Glock to work with, and I'm trying to go fast on the Glock, I would short stroke the Glock trigger all the time, like constantly. And my shooting pace was really slow. People are like, what's wrong with you? I thought you were a good shooter. Well, yeah, I'm pulling the trigger like three times before the damn gun goes off because the trigger reset is too long. So any time that you're going to change any gun and you're not just going to carry that one gun, and I was the one gun man. I carried two 1911s that I had, took them into the gunsmith, had them set up exactly the same in triggers and everything. The reset was the same. The trigger feel was the same. I had them set up exactly the same. Same manufacturer, too, on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, I could get away with that because that's the only two guns I ever carried.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything else was goof around stuff, and those are the two that I trained on all the time, except for when I ended up with some cool police opportunity or something, and they handed me a Glock, which, I'm sorry, I never really liked the Glock. They work awesome. I carried them in combat. You know, combat Tupperware, it's a real thing, and it really works. Just not my cup of tea. But, so when I did that, you know, if I'm switching back and forth to guns like that, that's going to be a problem. The other one on that is if you talk to guys that do this, the pros, Rob Lethem and Mike Seeklander, who are trying to, you know, be top shooters in the world, they talk about going back and forth to the two different guns. So, you know, they'll run double action guns and then single action guns. I mean, Lethem shoots for Springfield, so he'll run 1911s and the XDs all the time.
Yeah.
But when he goes back and forth to guns, if you ever talk to him about it, he will spend hundreds of rounds just running that gun at speed at different distances to go from one gun to the other.
Right.
So he'll pick up a gun for the season or 3 or 4 months, and he's running, you know, one of his tricked out 1911s, and then he'll run that one for a couple months, and then he goes back to his XDs. Well, when he goes back to his XD, he goes out to the range, and he runs a couple hundred rounds as fast as he can at speed at different distances.
Yes.
He'll spend a couple hours just getting reacclimated to that style trigger before he goes to shoot that gun again.
Yeah.
And this is one of the top shooters in the world that needs to go back and spend a couple hours of time with that different trigger and that different mechanism to get it on. So when you think you're going to run your 1911 from reset today and then carry your Glock tomorrow and be able to run that from reset, if some of the top shooters in the world can't do it, why are we messing around with trigger reset?
Yeah, you brought up a good point, and you just kind of reinforced a point that I made earlier, and that is unless you're the type of shooter that you're going to shoot thousands of rounds every month at the range, don't be switching platforms. Just don't. Don't do it for carry purposes. Now, you want to go play the game, have fun competition, or go with your buddies to the range and have fun blasting with different guns, fine. But as far as your carry, you know, stick to one, because I don't know about you, Ben, but I don't go out and practice as much as Rob Lethem does. And even if I did, I wouldn't be as good as him anyway.
I can't afford his ammo budget.
I can't afford it either. Yeah, I don't have an ammo sponsor either. So if you are listening to this, hey, let me urge you, just standardize with your carry piece.
Pick a gun and go with it.
Pick it and go with it.
And
get good.
And pick a system.
And pick a system.
So, you know, if you're going to carry Smith & Wesson's, I carry the M&P full-size, you know, 99% of the time. If I need a smaller gun because I'm wearing a T-shirt, I went to the dang kids' swim meet yesterday, and it was hotter than snot. I wore a T-shirt, and I didn't want to wear a real shirt, so I carried my small gun, which is the Shield.
The Shield, yeah.
And so it's the same platform.
They're both MMPs. They both feel the same, work the same. Right. Triggers are almost the same.
If you're going to do the Glock family, that's fine.
Yep.
Glocks work great. You know, you carry a Glock 17 out on the range, you carry a 19, you carry the 26, and you carry the 43 or even the 42. You know, carry that. SIG, you know, they got the full size, the compact, the subcompact, and now the 365. Ruger has a full size and a compact gun. Whatever system that you decide you're going to go with, try to pick a primary gun. This is the one I'm going to carry, even if it's a compact. You know, if you decide I need the compact gun, the subcompact gun, because I need a 3.3 inch barrel, but I'm going to carry a double stack, or even if I'm going to standardize on that single stack 9mm.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm going to carry 90% of the time. That's the one you're going to do 90% of your actually training and practice with, dry fire and live fire. And then the other guns you just pick up and practice with a lot. So I don't shoot that Shield very much. I shoot my big gun a lot. But when I go out to the range, I just notice with the Shield, I need to shoot a little bit slower because there's a little bit more muzzle flip and recoil. But I can still make hits out to 65 yards.
I've seen you do it. I've seen you do it. You're good with the Shield. And I think one of the reasons why you're good with the Shield is because you just said it's the same platform. It's basically the same gun as your full-size M&P, just smaller.
Yeah. So
it's the same gun.
I want to urge everybody to standardize on something. If you standardize on a 1911, that's cool too.
That's cool.
Pick a company and go with it. Even if it's
pick a platform. Even if it's a double action, single action.
Even if it's a Kimber, which hurts me to say as a Kimber is a carry gun.
Oh, come on.
It does. If you're a Kimber fan, I'm sorry. Kimber is the straightest shooting gun I've ever picked up in my life. Like a laser beam straight. They're some of the greatest, most accurate guns in the world. They rust constantly. And they have to be treated perfectly like that little baby child so it doesn't throw a hissy fit. And when I say your Kimber throws a hissy fit, it starts malfunctioning. It'll stovepipe, double feed, doesn't want to lock open, just has a hissy fit. If you treat it perfectly, even if you're going to standardize on the Kimber, that's fine. Standardize on it. Learn what your gun is. Learn the quirks of your gun. Every gun has a quirk. Figure out what it is. And then be able to overcome that quirk.
Yeah, and the thing is, you mentioned it earlier. I think it's important to have a full size or a mid size gun, and then a small version of the same thing. That's where I think 1911 folks run into some problems, because when you go to the small 1911s, the 3-inch 1911s, especially in 45, they can be problematic.
Oh, they don't even in 9mm. They're even worse.
Even in 9mm, so it's
hard. If you
get
below that 4-inch gun. Well, I'll tell you a story. So those two 1911s I carried were pair of ordnances. I had a P14 and a P12. The P12 is a 3.5-inch barreled 1911, all custom tricked out, had the triggers perfect. I replaced that recoil spring every 6 months like clockwork. That gun would go 500 or 600 rounds on a recoil spring, and then it would start malfunctioning.
That's all? 500 or 600 rounds? That's it?
I bought recoil springs for that thing in 2 packs.
You know, one of my Glock 19s, I've got about 12,000 rounds on it, and I'll be honest, I'm on my second recoil spring in 12,000 rounds.
Yeah, so those 1911, you got to figure out those small, if you're going to run those 1911s, you got to figure out where the quirks were. That P12, I figured out that thing's quirk.
Yeah.
Right there was 500 or 600 rounds, and it's like, I need a new recoil spring.
Okay.
Because it would start stovepiping on me.
As long as you know that, then, you know, buy a bunch of recoil springs in advance. They're not that expensive.
I carried an extra one in my range bag. I bought them in 2 packs. And so I just knew. And then every 6 months, whether I thought it needed it or not, I dropped a new one in there. I'd be on the range for a long training session, and it would start to stovepipe. I take apart the gun, drop the new one in, boom, problem solved.
Yeah.
So, and then it did help that I was shooting plus P ammo out of it as my carry ammo, even on a weakened spring where my normal ammo that wouldn't cycle it all the way.
Yeah.
The plus P ammo did. So I'd get a little bit more out of my carry ammo than I would out of normal ammo because I was running plus P. But those are the kinds of things you got to figure out. And if you stick with one gun and you just keep shooting it and shooting it and shooting it, you find those quirks. What's wrong with it? So the 365, found a quirk, got a student that's a private student. She keeps going and going. She loves that 365. That's like her gun.
Good.
It's her baby.
Good.
Well, she figured out if she lets it go dirty on her, the way she grips it, she's a smaller statured woman, that when it starts to get dirty, it starts to not want to lock that slide open for her.
Yeah.
And that's for her shooting thing, and she's got no problem with that. So she cleans it a little bit more and oils it a little bit more than I would if it was my gun. And she's
nothing
got
wrong
no problem
with that.
Oh, she likes doing it too.
Yeah.
Like I said, she just loves that gun. It's her baby. But she figured out this little weird quirk with this little gun. It runs like a champ. I haven't seen that thing malfunction yet on her. And she said, nope, I noticed at the range. I went to the range last week, and I'm shooting it, and I could feel it get a little dirty, and it stopped locking the mag open.
Okay.
I put some oil on it, locked that slide open on the last round. So, you know, hey, it's you find those little quirks. If you're a one-gun person, she's the one-gun person. That .365 is hers. It's the only thing she carries. It's the only thing she shoots. It's her gun.
There you go. And it makes it so much easier to maintain if you're only maintaining one gun of one type of platform. You buy parts in advance. You buy what you think is going to fail. You buy them in advance, and you've got them.
Or even better yet, like me, I have two full-size M&Ps.
Yes.
One's the one I carry every day. And for me, I like it because the other one is my dry practice gun. I found a company that does drop-in yellow barrels, the plastic barrel.
Yep.
So I can't get a live round in there. Doesn't matter because the barrel is closed off. I can't load a live round.
Right, there's no way for ammo to go inside.
So there's no way for me to have an oops that I'm really upset with.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still safe on all my dry practice. It doesn't, you know, just another added layer of safety I use. But that one, the yellow barrel just stays in it. I pull that one out of the safe. I practice with it. I put that one in the safe. And then I don't have to have my other gun out. So, but I have two working guns that are exactly the same. So if one of them breaks, I have the other one.
And I did a podcast on that. I think it was about a year or a year and a half ago. And the title of the podcast was Buy Two. Buy two. Once you settle on a gun that works for you, buy a second one. Save the money, budget, sell some stuff, whatever. Buy a second of the same gun. I'm a bigger fan of that than buying another gun of a different type.
Yeah, and even the second one. So the first one I have has the cool night sights on it and everything. The second one just has the stock sights. I didn't do anything with it. I just got it set in the safe.
That's okay.
You know, don't worry about it. But it's a second gun. And sometimes you need a second gun. So somebody else that I was training, she had a real problem. She actually had a stalker. She really needed a gun.
Yeah.
Well, her little primary gun that she was carrying broke and had to go back to the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have another gun.
Yeah.
I was going to loan her one because she was in that much need, but she ended up just going buying another gun like mm-hmm. that day.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Texas, you can buy the gun and pick it up the same day. She bought it and picked it up the same day. So, you know, that's kind of a... Especially you guys in states that require 10-day waiting periods.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, or the other one is, hey, let's talk real world. If you have a shooting,
yes,
they are going to take your gun from you, and they're going to put it in a little bag, mark it evidence. You may or may never see that thing again.
And you better have another one.
And, well, how about real world here, work for Sparks Firearms. Guy comes in and says, I need another gun. I want a Glock 30. And it's like, okay, so you want to give us a story on what happened? Yeah, I own a bar over here. Somebody tried to come in and kill all my Patreons. I shot at him. The cops took my gun. And all of his buddies said they're coming back today to finish me off.
Ah.
And
okay.
So who has his gun? The cops.
The cops.
So luckily he had a CHL that wasn't revoked yet. Because, when you have a shooting and they're not sure and they arrest you, they may revoke your CHL. Because you've
been arrested. Temporarily until your court case is over.
Right. So, yeah. But if you have all of his friends saying, we're going to come back tomorrow and finish you off, you know, you might want to have a second one. Just, you know, say he came in, you know, he came in Texas. He bought the new one. He went back to work. No problem. We don't share his name and everything because he won't give me. I wanted to get him on a podcast with what happened. But he's like, nope, don't want any of that. But here's my story. And I need another one. I got one for you right here, bud. I mean, he didn't even look at it. He just filled out the paperwork. And I suggest, why don't you go down the street to the range and test this thing first since, they're coming back for you tonight.
yeah, that's a... See, there's a situation right there. All right, well, I think this is a good stopping point. I wanted to keep it, you know, fairly brief, and we covered some good info. Let me just say this. Once again, check out the Shooters Club. Come see us at one of our classes. And also, check out Ben's podcast, the Modern Self-Protection podcast at modernselfprotection.com. Ben, thanks.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's trying to be short, but we're never short. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
We're good enough, short enough. All right, talk to you guys later.
Hello, I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry advanced class with Ben Branham, Bob Main, Chaz Murray, and Tracy Thronberg. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Well, thanks, Ben. I figured you'd find some of those experiences interesting and hopefully beneficial for you. You know, before I put interviews on this show, I listen to them, obviously, before I put them up. Obviously, I hear it when I'm doing the interview, and then I listen back to the whole thing, and I always learn something the second time. And I'll probably end up listening to it a third time as well. Please check out Ben's podcast, modernselfprotection.com. And again, we hope to train with you June 23rd and 24th in San Antonio. As you heard us talk about in that segment, we want to go back on the road a little bit later this year. If you would like to host myself and Ben Branham to do a class, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, we would love to come up there. Contact me or Ben directly, and we'll talk to you about the requirements that we would need to come out there and do a class for you. You can email me at bob@handgunworld.com, bob@handgunworld.com, or ben@modernselfprotection.com, ben@modernselfprotection.com. Obviously, we're going to need a minimum number of students, and we're going to need you to make the range arrangements for us and things like that, but we'll talk to you about that. Most of the time, it works out pretty well. We're both fully insured and have quite a bit of hours instruction experience that we can present to a prospective range owner or manager. So just let us know about that. We'd love to possibly come out and see you and teach a class. So for the personal development section of this podcast, as most of you know, I'd like to do a little bit on personal development or modern survival. When I used to do today's survival show, you know, I used to talk about doing what you can with what you have wherever you are. And I think that is the key in life. Do what you can with whatever you have wherever you are. Teddy Roosevelt once said that, and it's something that I think is very important. So I want to talk about time, because do what you can with what you have wherever you are really applies a lot to time. Time, as we know, is something you can never, ever get back. It's my goal to make the time that you spend listening to this podcast as valuable as you can. I can never give this time back to you. This podcast is free, so you don't have to pay anything for it, but I can't give your time back to you. And so it's my goal, really, to give you the best value that I can. So having said all of that, here's what I want to start with. Always do the most productive thing possible at any given moment. One of my mentors taught me that when I was a young man. Always do the most productive thing possible at every given moment. Now, what does that mean? Well, productive doesn't always mean making money or building something or achieving some kind of a task. Maybe just sitting down with a family member, maybe calling an old friend and getting caught up, sitting down with someone in your family and just having a discussion with them, watch a movie with them, play a game with them, read a book with them, call the friend you haven't talked to in a year or 2 years, kind of reignite your friendship with them, or whatever. Spending time with your spouse, maybe taking a nap. I found out that sometimes the most productive thing I could do is to take a nap. Maybe I didn't get enough sleep the day before. Maybe I've been stressed out. We've all been stressed out, right? I've had plenty of things to stress me out in my life. Sometimes I find just laying down for a little while, even if it's just 30 minutes, shut my eyes for a little while and just relax and try to clear my mind. That can be productive. Time management is so critical. Let's apply this to shooting. What are you spending your valuable time practicing at the range doing? In other words, you pay money for the range, right? Sometimes by the hour. Sometimes it's a flat fee. What are you doing? The thing I like to do, And Ben and I were doing that in the practice session you just heard about. I like to pick one task, maybe two, and just focus on those. This last range session, Ben and I wanted to practice our moving and shooting. That's what we did most of the time, moving and shooting. Yes, we filmed a little bit of video where Ben was comparing the Apex trigger on the M&P to a stock trigger, but that wasn't the majority of the time. So we narrowed this one down to two tasks. We did moving and shooting, and we did that review on the triggers. Most of the time, I like to just pick one thing. If it's marksmanship, if it's moving and shooting, if it's drawing from the holster properly and safely and presenting the gun to the target and making the first one or two good hits, maybe it's something like a dot torture drill. Maybe it's something like a bill drill. Maybe it's some kind of a speed drill, whatever. Maybe it's something you learned in a class that you want to practice. Maybe you didn't do very well on it in the class. And so just pick that one technique and spend your entire range time doing that. What do you think? It means you're probably going to have to make several trips to the range. Hey, isn't that the fun of it? Isn't that what's so fun? The reason I bring this up is I think if you try to go there and do six things at one time in an hour and a half at the range or 2 hours at the range, I don't think you're going to be able to get the most value out of your practice time if you're trying to do six different things and try to master them all or try to get in some good practice. Pick one or two. And now let's apply this to just life. Okay? Time. You know, it just gets away so fast. Here I am. I'm 56 and a half years old, and I'm wondering, where did all the time go? Wow. At the end of your life, you're probably not going to regret the money that you didn't make. You're probably not going to regret the house you didn't own. You're not going to regret the car that you didn't buy. You're probably not going to regret the clothes that you didn't purchase or the jewelry you didn't buy or even the guns that you didn't buy. What you may regret is the time that you didn't spend with the people who matter to you the most. Your family, your friends, your parents, your girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, or wives, whoever's in your life that's close to you. And this helps you to lead a balanced life. I'm a firm believer in a balanced life. I get out of balance sometimes. I really do. I sometimes just get too focused, too stressed, and I just get too carried away with one thing, and I have to stop myself and say, Bob, what are you doing? You know, just take a break. Sometimes I find just by taking a break and walking away from what it is I'm trying to do or the problem that I'm trying to solve, just walk away for a while. I come back a couple of hours later and my mind is refreshed. I have a different perspective on it. I think about it differently. I go about it differently and I get more positive results. So that's it for the personal development part of this episode of the Handgun World podcast. Let me know what you think. I'd like to get voicemails from you. 210-646-1727. That's the phone number. 210-646-1727. Emails, bob@handgunworld.com. Follow me on Facebook, search Handgun World. Follow me on Twitter, Handgun World. On YouTube, Bob's Bullet Points or Handgun World. I got a series of Bob's Bullet Points on YouTube I think you'll find useful. Also got many videos pertaining to the Handgun World podcast on YouTube. Love to have you there as a listener. And the next episode, which is going to come out on July 1st, because I try to put these shows out on the 1st and 15th of every month, I hope to address some listener questions and feedback that come in through voicemail or email. So keep those coming. So I want to finish this episode by playing Andrew Branca's Case of the Week, Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week. I'm an affiliate with Andrew Branca, the author of The Law of Self-Defense. And if you want to purchase his products or classes, go to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld. lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld. Handgun World's all one word. Check that out. He's got good stuff out there. Again, so that's going to be the conclusion of this episode. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women Shoot straight, shoot safe, read your Bible every day. And I'll talk to you next time. Stay tuned for Andrew Branca's Case of the Week.
Thanks for joining us for the Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com. This case of the week is State v. Barlett, and it comes out of the Kansas Supreme Court. It's a good illustration of how even a state Supreme Court can get the law badly wrong and take a full 15 years before it corrects its own error. In this particular case, there were two groups of men driving around in two automobiles, chasing each other and exchanging gunfire. The driver of one of the cars ends up with a passenger that shoots someone in the other car. The passenger who fires the killing shot cuts a deal with the prosecutors and testifies against the driver. The driver was not the person who fired the shot, so he's charged not with murder but with felony murder for being engaged in criminal conduct when the shot was fired. At trial, the defendant seeks to raise the legal defense of self-defense, but the trial court says no, they will not instruct the jury on self-defense. The reason is there's a Kansas statute that states that you cannot claim self-defense to justify the use of force in the course of an underlying felony. The idea behind this is if you're robbing a liquor store and the clerk pulls a gun on you, you don't get to shoot him and then claim it was defending yourself against his gun because you were committing that underlying felony, the robbery. 15 years ago, the Kansas Supreme Court established a rule based on that statutory provision that you were not permitted to argue self-defense to justify a use of force if you were committing some underlying crime. The problem with this rule is obvious, even at a glance. If you defend yourself against a deadly force attack and you use your licensed handgun to do so, when you kill that other person, but the prosecutor decides to take you to court anyway, he's going to charge you with murder or manslaughter or some similar killing charge, all of which are forcible felonies. And as a result, deny you the ability to justify that use of deadly defensive force as self-defense based on this rule established by the Kansas Supreme Court. In this particular case, the trial judge with this defendant was simply following the well-established rule. And when the defendant was convicted and appealed his conviction to the Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction, again applying the rule established by the Superior Kansas Supreme Court. Then the defendant appealed the affirmation of his conviction all the way back up to the Kansas Supreme Court and gave them an opportunity to readdress this rule. And when they did that, they decided to change the rule. Now the new rule is that for you to be denied self-defense because you were committing some underlying criminal act, the underlying criminal act needs to be something in addition, beyond your use of force that you're seeking to justify as self-defense. So in the self-defense scenario, if the only alleged criminal conduct is the shooting of that person, that can't be an underlying criminal act to be used to bar you from claiming self-defense. If you're committing some other criminal act, like robbing a liquor store, then that criminal conduct, which is independent of your use of force, can be used to bar you from justifying your use of force as lawful self-defense. Interestingly, in this particular case, even though the Kansas Supreme Court changed the rule to be better aligned with the defendant's legal arguments, the defendant's conviction was nevertheless reaffirmed by the Kansas Supreme Court because there was a second reason to deny the defendant a self-defense jury instruction, and that is that the defendant was a mutual combatant. Mutual combat is when two people or two groups of people agree to settle their differences through physical force, through fighting. If you're a mutual combatant, both you and the other party who's agreed to fight with you are mutual aggressors. You're both co-aggressors in that conflict. And as an aggressor, you lose the element of innocence. And if you've lost the element of innocence, you lose self-defense. As always, I encourage you to read this decision in its entirety. And you can do that by simply pointing your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/Barlett. That's B-A-R-L-E-T-T. lawofselfdefense.com/Barlett. If you enjoy this content, I invite you to join us for the Law of Self-Defense live show every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's totally free to either participate live or to watch the recording after each show. For more information, point your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/show. Remember, you carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com. How can people be so